If I bleed tonight, if I am sad tonight, I don't have a job to find. And if I work tonight, if I'm so tired tonight, I'll fall asleep when I'm home. When I'm
Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Power Slam podcast here on Inside the Ropes. My name is Kenny McIntosh, joined as always by Finn Martin. Now, Finn, do you know what is special about today's episode of the Power Slam podcast?
Now, is this our third anniversary?
This is our third anniversary. Can you believe it, everybody?
Third anniversary. I mean, we would have done something huge, but Kenny's had a very busy week. I mean, people may not know about this, Kenny, but what a week you've had.
I have. I've been moving house, and when you're a hoarder, as well as a collector, as well as a promoter, as well as a person who stocks your own merch, then that's a big move that you've got to do. So I was moving over like a period of 5 days, was very, very apprehensive that the internet might not work, but it's working, so happy days. But you know, see, when you move house, and you'll know this, Finn, when you decide to downsize from a 10-bedroom mansion to a sort of smaller house when you're maybe in your later years, that
the next move, Kenny, we're going bigger. Next move.
Oh, really? Why not? Go big or go home. The thing is like when you're moving, you kind of think, oh God, I wish I was one of those people who just didn't have a lot of possessions. Because they just don't really need to do much, but then once you get in and once you get everything set up, you go, I'm glad I've got all my stuff.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I know what you mean. Yeah. It is worth it. You know, once you put the work in. You know, but it's like anything. You've got to put the work into anything, and it all makes it all worthwhile.
Exactly. So, but 3 years ago we started doing the Power Slam podcast. So it's very fun that we are now here 3 years later still doing it.
That's right. I mean, I don't think we've fallen out too many times.
We've not even fallen out once. You know, we've not even got any sort of juicy gossip to give anybody. We've just got on from day one.
Well, exactly. I mean, maybe we need to resolve to fall out, Kenny. You know, I mean, it's not exactly the time-honored tradition of the business, is it? Actually, I shouldn't really be discussing those things right now, and I can't really go into it. Well, it'll no doubt come out at some point over the next few weeks, something that's happened. So let's just move on.
Oh, wow, okay. Looking forward to that. Well, I mean, the thing is, if I ever want to follow up with you, I can always just, you know, really prod that Cena bandwagon train, and eventually that could lead to a fallout. But I mean, well, I couldn't lie that much. I couldn't do that.
I mean, he did turn up, didn't he, as a talking head on SmackDown. So I'm still recovering from that, Kenny. You know? It's you know, it's just take me back, you know.
Well, we will get to it. But there's so much news to cover, so much stuff to talk about. I mean, I guess one of the first things we should bring up, because everybody's been talking about it, is the sort of COVID implications in WWE. Lots of people have tested positive. Renee Young, Adam Pearce, Jamie Noble, Kayla Braxton now has it for a second time. There's kind of rumors that lots of people, you know, in the tens of people have COVID, and, you know, the testing procedure seems to be fairly lax compared to, you know, AEW do seem to have been doing a good job of testing everybody and sort of saying if you're not able to, you know, I think QT Marshall had been involved, it had been around somebody who had it. So he was taken off last week's Dynamite show.
Yeah, that was mentioned on the commentary, wasn't it, by Jim Ross, I think it was. Yeah.
Yeah, and then Moxley, he was taken off the show because he was supposed to be in action to hype the match with Brian Cage, but obviously with him living with Renee Young and being married to her, they took him off the show. So, I mean, what do you think about the idea of, you know, we also hear stories that Vince McMahon wanted to run events with fans before the end of July, and only yesterday did he sort of acquiesce that can't happen. I mean, do you think that Vince just doesn't think that COVID is a big deal? Is the CNC a hoax? Is he not taking it seriously? I mean, because the thing is, over here, we're in the UK, we are taking it so seriously, you know, that we have had complete shutdowns, and we had shutdowns for months. It just doesn't seem to be the same over there.
Yeah, I mean, I looked up the numbers. I mean, in Florida, they had a record number of new infections. That was 9,585 just in Florida on Saturday. And then there was 8,530 on Sunday. So, I mean, like, Florida is one of the hotspots for it right now. And as we know, WWE tapes at the Performance Center in Orlando and AEW tapes at Daly's Place in Jacksonville. So, like, Florida's where the wrestling's coming from, and that's where there's so many cases. I did notice on Raw, on SmackDown and Raw, the June 26th SmackDown and the June 29th Raw, that some people behind the Perspex were wearing masks. So, I mean, that was a shift, because I think prior to that, I mean, I'm sure someone would have worn a mask prior to that, but generally they didn't. So that did seem like a policy shift there.
I think the problem seems to be that, as far as I'm aware, if you're at AEW and you go in to tape, you have to take a coronavirus test and pass before you're able to go in. But I don't think that that's been the case kind of all along for WWE. So, because I think that was the idea of why the people who were around ringside at AEW, they had all kind of passed the test and got in and had the wristband kind of thing.
Okay.
Whereas in WWE, they weren't doing that. So there's even more of a need, it seems, in WWE to have the masks on.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, they all should be doing the test. I mean, the thing about the testing, of course, is that there is that incubation period, isn't there? So you can be tested and it may not show up on the test and you've still got it. And it sometimes doesn't show up for a period of time after you've contracted it. So, I mean, I'm sure there's lots of conflicting information about that. But as I understand it, that is the way it is that you can be tested and the test can read negative, but you may have it, but it won't actually come up on the test for another day or two. I believe that's correct. Is that how you understand it as well, Kenny?
I think so, yeah, because I think most people, I think with AEW especially, everybody comes into town the day before.
Okay.
They have to be in the day before to get tested, I imagine, because then that would kind of follow up with that. And then WWE, because they've tested people. I think they can get the results back the same day, but it is a long wait process. Yeah. Like if you get tested in the morning, you're not getting it back by lunch. Like it has to be pretty much a full day. So I mean, WWE have had a few tapings now that they've had to stop or reschedule. I mean, the SmackDown that we're talking about later in this podcast, they turned, you know, there's a lot of people not on that show.
Absolutely, yeah.
And they turned it into kind of a tribute to The Undertaker. So I think you are going to see, though, like a lot of performers are going to choose to not come to work if they think there's any chance they're going to get COVID.
Well, absolutely. With that many cases, and that's just the ones that have been tested, obviously there will be people who have it who haven't been tested and are not in the official figures. So there'll be lots more people who have it who could pass it on. It is a risk. There's no doubt about that. So you can understand why a wrestler or a trainee or whomever that's involved in the process, whether the talent or in the crowd, would be reluctant or would refuse to go. I mean, obviously, we haven't seen Roman Reigns since February. It was February, I think, was the last time we saw Roman Reigns, wasn't it?
Yeah, no, I think it was March, because he was scheduled to be in the match with Goldberg at WrestleMania.
That's right, yeah.
And then it was
absolutely, yeah, he was around in March, but we're talking now, it's like well over 3 months since we last saw him, of course. Yeah, that's right, it was around early March, and then Braun replaced him.
And even Kevin Owens, who's not been around the last took a couple of tapings. I think he's had a family member who passed away from COVID.
Okay.
He's obviously not going to be coming back until it's sorted. And I think at this point it's kind of if you don't feel safe in the environment, then you're not going to go.
Well, absolutely. I mean, with the number of cases going up, because I mean, they opened a lot of the bars, and then in some states they've since closed the bars. So it seemed fairly obvious to me. I mean, obviously, we're just lay people talking about this. We don't really, we're not experts on COVID-19, but it does appear that they opened things too quickly in the States, and they've been far more cautious in the UK, certainly more in Scotland than they are in England. Scotland's a little bit behind England. We've had the thing in England with Leicester, with a lot of cases there. So Leicester's lockdown is going to be extended by at least 2 weeks. So it does definitely seem like the UK has been more stringent in its approach, more cautious in its approach. Whereas America, it's been like, well, we need to get things open, and they've reopened, and that's resulted in this massive spike in cases in various states, including Florida, where WWE and AEW take their television. I'm not saying that we're not going to have spikes in the UK. I think we will in many towns and cities. Unfortunately, I think just with the amount of people that are going to be mixing in a closer proximity, it's inevitable that will happen. But yeah, in America, regarding the wrestling right now, it's got to be a worrying time with that level of infection out there. And if you're around the wrestling, they had a lumberjack match, didn't they, at the start of AEW last week? So you had a lot of performers congregating at ringside. If they've all been tested and those tests were accurate, we don't know how accurate the testing is in the States. There's probably some of the testing in the UK isn't accurate either. I think sometimes you were saying earlier that Kayla Braxton claims she got it twice. I didn't think that was possible. So, was one of the tests inaccurate? So, as far as I know, you can't catch this thing twice. And I saw the comment she made on Twitter. She tested positive for it twice. Maybe the first time, the test result was wrong. I don't know. But it's obviously a very worrying time right now. And the more interaction you have with other human beings, inevitably increases the chances that you might catch it. So, it's really worrying. We've been in lockdown for, was it over 100 days now? I think it is.
Yeah, so then we went into lockdown on March 20th, I think it was.
Yeah, I think they were saying it was just over 100 days the other day when they were talking about it, they marked that. But it seems to me like in America that this could drag on and on. And Vince is there. It's like he's no selling this whole thing. I read a report online that he's wanting to run a show, I think, in September with fans present. Did you see that one, Kenny?
There was a report on Wrestling Observer Live that Vince wanted to run events with fans before the end of July. And he was, that's now not possible. But yes, September is now the new... I think there was a show in Cleveland that had been cancelled that's now been rescheduled for September 27th.
Yes, that's the one.
A live Monday Night Raw. So, it's impossible to know where Cleveland or where Ohio is going to be by the end of September. But I would be very surprised if Cleveland is at a point where they're able to let thousands of people into an arena, unless they just do it anyway.
Well, yeah, that is nearly 3 months off, admittedly. But seeing those recent stats, which are obviously not fake news, are real. This actually is happening. It sounds to me, or seems to me, that it's like this thing is far from over and could potentially get even worse in some parts of the States. I hope that's not the case. But that's a huge... alarm bells are going off in my head. It should be going off as well for everyone in wrestling right now with this number of cases. It's like, how do we handle this? Because we want to reduce the cases. We don't want our talent getting this thing because it's obviously really bad for them. It's going to prolong this thing even more. It's a very worrying time, I think, for wrestling people. And I think if you're running a wrestling promotion right now, I would absolutely advise extreme caution. You need to be overly cautious, not less cautious. You need to ramp up the testing and the measures that you can take to prevent people from catching this. That seems like a case of stating the obvious, really, Kenny, doesn't it?
It does. And the thing is, the other thing that I don't know if people are talking about a lot is that, for AEW especially, if AEW don't run TV, that does breach their TV deal. and they would then potentially lose their TV deal, which would mean that they are done. That's kind of how important it is to them. So I think that's maybe part of the reason why their testing seems to be so strict, and sort of they are doing as much as they can to make it happen. With WWE, there does seem to be an element of kind of, you know, we're in a bubble and everything's going to be okay and we'll make it work no matter what the circumstances, which has always kind of been the MO. But yeah, I think, like you said, it's just going to come to a point soon where you either have to, it either has to be complete, you know, people need to be completely clean and not have it to perform, or things are going to get worse. And, you know, you don't want to get to a point where a state are trying to shut WWE down. I mean, I did kind of, as a lighthearted aside, you mentioned Leicester earlier on in the UK, who are the first city to be shut down on their own because their cases have spiked.
Yeah.
I did love that there was a piece in the paper about the mayor or whatever of Leicester broke the rules at the height of lockdown to go and see his bit on the side, which, and then he was caught climbing a pair of ladders trying to get in our house.
Oh my God. No, I didn't see that story, Kevin.
Can't make it up.
Yeah. Oh dear.
But there you go. Well, listen,
he's knighted. I'm sure he's a sir as well, isn't he?
Yeah, I think he is. He's like 71. The thing is,
I think he's still got it.
He's still
letting that pencil.
I mean, listen, put it this way. Guys, think about this. This is a pandemic where he has said, do not leave your house, and he is willing at 71 to climb a ladder during a pandemic when there's a lockdown to get his hole. So more power to him. More power to him.
Well, really, no. Not more power to him, but my God, I'm glad he's been nailed for it anyway. So I'm glad he's been nailed. I mean, dear me. Yeah.
Anyway.
Not the first and not the last, I'm sure, a person in a position of authority to have broken the rules that he himself is espousing to the general public.
It's going to happen again. Anyway, so there's loads of other stuff to talk about. We should mention quickly that this week is the 22-year anniversary of Hell in a Cell with Mick Foley and Undertaker. We actually put a video up on our YouTube channel.
The anniversary edition of the Power Slam podcast.
All the anniversaries rolled into one. But the thing is, with the anniversary of the Hell in a Cell match, we put a clip up on our YouTube channel 2 days ago with Mick talking about the Hell in a Cell match at our Rise of the Taker Tales from Hell show. And it's done like massive numbers. 261,000 people have watched it so far in 2 days. So there still seems to be an appetite there for people with this match, or hearing Mick talk about it, or Taker. What are your memories of the match, Finn? I mean, you also got to speak to Mick not long after it in an issue of Power Slam as well. So you got to kind of speak to him not long after it.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I interviewed him for issue 50, I think it was. The interview is in the Power Slam Interviews Volume 2. I think it was the first, I'm sure it was the first interview he did, or the first long-form interview he did after the Hell in a Cell match. There's a story all about how difficult it was to get that interview and to make it happen. That's all there in the book. My memory of it was everyone was talking about that match. Everyone was talking about it afterwards. I remember like the next day speaking to Rob Butcher, who was a big part of Power Slam back then. And we talked about it at length and couldn't quite believe what had occurred and that Foley had put himself through that level of abuse to get that match and himself over. It was obviously, we'd seen Foley do a lot of crazy things prior to that. But that topped everything he'd done, you know, from King of the Death match to the matches with Vader. Well, I mean, I guess the matches with Vader, obviously, you know, the incident with him losing the ear, that was an accident. I think I'm more referring to the matches, you know, in which he allowed Vader to powerbomb him on the concrete, you know, in WCW. That was obviously planned. The ear incident was an accident. But I mean, still, you know, he'd done a lot of crazy things prior to this, but this was still like the match that, where Foley had really gone and done things that no one thought he ever would do. For a long time, people were trying to work out whether that second bump was planned. And I think at first he was denying. He was saying that it was not planned, but it actually was planned. So that was something that came out later. But I mean, yeah, my memories of it are that first bump, that first throw off the top of the cage, and they had the camera in exactly the right position, so they obviously knew it was coming, and he was thrown off, and Jim Ross only just got out of the way in time. And that's my, you know, enduring memory of that match, Foley flying through the air and hitting the announce desk, and Jim Ross only just getting out of the way. That's the one moment from the match that I remember more than any, more than the tooth in his nose, you know, the choke slam through the cage roof, him going out on the stretcher, you know, him being, I don't think he was actually KO'd, but I think he actually might have been KO'd for a very short time. But there was like shot where the camera got a close up of him and the tooth's hanging out of his nose, stuck and embedded in his nose. And he's pulling this really, you know, really sinister expression. And you know that he's just, you know, he's been knocked. I think the phrase he used was knocked loopy, I think was the phrase he used to describe his condition at that time. But it was, yeah, everyone was talking about it for a long time afterwards. And it was sort of the moment as well when you knew that the ECW was in deep, deep trouble, because WWF was more extreme than them. That was another thing that quite a few people pointed out at the time. The, you know, WWF at this, by this point, you know, was that match. And then it was the first Blood match as well with Austin and Kane, wasn't it, that followed it?
Yeah. Yeah. That was the name of the show.
There was a lot of blood in that. And that was a real hardcore match as well. And Austin knew he had to go out. Austin knew he could never top what had happened before his match with Kane, but he gave it a good go in that match, you know, to at least give people a match to remember. And that felt like a real hardcore match as well. But it was I don't know whether you would call it a turning point. Some people were concerned that after Foley took these bumps off the cage, that it would lead to more people or more performers doing moves like that in WWF, which didn't really happen happily. I think obviously Foley took those brutal chair shots from Rock at Royal Rumble in their I Quit match, which was, you know, very unsettling to watch, harrowing content really. But we never really saw a repeat of that. No one really did try to top that. I mean, I guess you could say maybe Shane McMahon in the matches when he took the fall off the when he took the bump off the Titantron, but that kind of looked a lot more controlled to me.
Yeah, and he even goes on later on to do the, because Shane actually does the Kevin Owens Hell in a Cell bump and the Undertaker Hell in a Cell bump, where he tries to do something, but it's, I feel like it's like you couldn't really capture the spontaneity of the Hell in a Cell match at King of the Ring, because it just felt like you couldn't believe it when you saw it. And it was like, you couldn't really replicate that again. It was like a once, you know, no matter what they do with a Hell in a Cell match ever again, you'll never replicate that.
And yeah, you'll never top it. I mean, I think obviously Michaels in the first Hell in a Cell match, Shawn Michaels and Undertaker at the Bad Blood pay-per-view in October 97, Shawn Michaels did take the bump off the side of the cage and landed on the announce desk.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that was quite shocking at the time.
Which has a great... There's a tremendous visual of when Sean falls off the side of the cage and Hugo Savinovich falls like a sack of shit onto his chair. And he just looks like he just did not... He sold it so well.
Yeah.
Because he'd just been... but yeah, it's very funny. If you watch that Shawn Michaels bump back, watch Hugo Savinovich. It's great.
So, I mean, you know, that first Hell in a Cell match, because it was, you know, one of the greatest matches in company history at that point, such an amazing performance by both men. And really, you know, at this point, the Attitude Era, I mean, the Attitude Era really began with the Vince speech on TV in December of 97. I mean, some people say, well, it began at Bad Blood. And fair enough, if that's when it started for you, I'm not going to argue with you. And that was a very Attitude Era-esque matchup. So, I mean, I think Foley knew that he had to do something radical, something outrageous to try and top that. And I don't think he did top it in terms of match quality, but he certainly topped it in terms of shock value. And the fact that people are still interested in listening to Foley talk about it after he's done numerous interviews about it. He's done books about it. I mean, he's talked about it, you know, at length. But as you say, the video has received over 200,000 hits, you said, Kenny, over 2,000?
Over 260,000 views in 2 days.
260,000 views. The fact that that many people are still interested in watching and listening to him talk about it 22 years on just tells you the enduring impact and power of that match. You know, it
yes, for sure.
Conveys that perfectly, illustrates that and confirms that. So, you know, good for Mick that the match still matters 22 years later.
So before we're going to talk about SmackDown on this show, and then we'll talk about Raw on the Overrun tomorrow. But before we talk about that, the ratings for last Wednesday's AEW and NXT were very interesting, because AEW have kind of held the win most weeks this year and held the demo most weeks, but that wasn't the result last Wednesday.
No, it wasn't. I mean, NXT drew 786,000 viewers and Dynamite drew 633,000 viewers. So that was a huge difference, you know, over 150,000 viewers difference between the two promotions. It's, as you say, I mean, I think AEW on June 10th, I think, just won by a few thousand viewers that week. So it had been close some weeks, hadn't it? But I don't recall NXT ever defeating AEW by that margin. I mean, maybe they have, but if they have, it's not been any time recently.
No, I can't think of a time. And then it was funny because I was trying to watch. I watched the episode of NXT last week, and I didn't think the NXT episode was particularly like one of the best they've ever done. Like, it was decent, but I do wonder if maybe people were kind of, if that said more in some ways about how people weren't really digging that week's Dynamite. It didn't feel like it packed a punch. It felt like we were ready to get to Fighter Fest and you didn't really need another week of TV to build it.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the NXT, I mean, it did have the Keith Lee versus Finn Balor versus Johnny Gargano main event, didn't it? With the implications of whoever won would then face Adam Cole. You know, the Great American Bash is the theme, isn't it, of the next 2 weeks of NXT. Which is obviously to counteract Dynamite's Fighter Fest theme. So, I mean, it's, you know, it's head-to-head war. It's bringing on. So I think they did do a pretty good job of building up the June 24th NXT. I thought the June 17th NXT, the ratings, I think, were quite close for AEW and NXT that week. And that had a pretty big, I mean, Bayley and Sasha Banks, they did a really good number, I think, for the final quarter of that episode. And Bayley and Sasha right now, as we say week after week, you know, hottest act at the moment in WWE. And they went in there and had the match with Shotzi Blackheart and Tegan Nox, of course, won. You know, I thought it was a decent match. It was nothing that was going to blow your mind. But I think the fact that Bayley and Sasha Banks were heading back to NXT to make a defense of their title, that obviously was, that had pulling power. That was a draw. So I think they did do a good job of building up the June 24th episode. And many times the reason a show does well is because the previous episode has promoted the next episode so well. So occasionally, you know, if the show's not that good, that's less important than the hype for it being effective. But I do absolutely agree with you on the June 24th episode of Dynamite. Didn't feel blockbuster. Certainly the first hour of the program just kind of felt miserable, really.
Because obviously, I mean, the big question now is going to be for everybody going into tonight, as we record this on Wednesday afternoon, we've got the Great American Bash themed NXTs this week and next week, and we've got Fighter Fest themed Dynamites this week and next week. I think the Fighter Fest card is probably more built as a card because they've been kind of doing those angles and stories for the last kind of month or so. But then NXT does have, you know, the big hitters with Io Shirai versus Sasha Banks, Keith Lee and Adam Cole. So, I mean, do you have a gut in terms of, do you think NXT is going to be able to keep that momentum? Do you think Dynamite's got more of a shot this week because they have a more of a blockbuster lineup? Like, what do you think?
I think the numbers will be closer, but I think NXT will probably win again this week, but not by such a significant margin. That's my feeling. But, I mean, you look at last week's NXT in the first hour. You know, you had a lumberjack match with Wardlow and Luchasaurus. Kairi Shida versus a jobber. We had a press conference, which I thought was really dull. Colt Cabana and Brody Lee, which is just an inexplicable act. Maybe it will be explained at a later date.
What do you think of Colt Cabana's acting performance, Finn, in trying to convey the sort of him being torn between being Mr. Boom Boom and being part of the Dark Order? It was nuanced for days.
I mean, for a guy who's been around wrestling as long as he has, the feeling I get is that his heart isn't in this storyline. You would think, you know, if I was working for AEW and they were paying me what Colt Cabana's earning, which I'm sure is probably the best money he's ever made in wrestling, or if not the best, not far off, I would be giving it my all, Kenny. I wouldn't care what they gave me. I would do everything within my power to make it work.
Are you saying that you would be the Dusty Rhodes with the polka dots, not the Red Rooster Terry Taylor?
Exactly. You know, I'd put in a spellbinding performance, Kenny. You know, it would be my mission in life to make whatever they gave me work. I don't care how crap it was. I'd go out there and make it work. But there again, Brody Lee, it's not exactly a dynamic character, and the Dark Order could be the worst faction in wrestling right now. So, I mean, you know, I think I'd have to, I don't know where that enthusiasm would come from, but I'd find it from somewhere.
I believe in you. I believe you could find it.
I'm sure this has been mentioned somewhere else, but I just thought I'd mention it here. I watched the press conference for the Cody and Jake Hager match, and the two reporters in the crowd were Liz Hunter and Matt Brock from PWI. Now, as far as I know, those were pseudonyms. They were like pen names for other people. They were actually real people who wrote for PWI back in the day. I'm sure somebody, has anyone been talking about this, Kenny?
I've not. All I saw was Tony Khan saying that he wanted those people there. What I've got to say to him is, if they're going to have a press conference, where's Finn Martin? Where are the other big hitters?
Where's Kenny McIntosh?
I would have obviously flown over with my mask on, went to Daly's place, got my test, and went in to ask an inane question for a fake press conference.
Now, Liz Hunter, Matt Brock was definitely the old time, right? When I first started reading PWI in the late 80s or whenever it was, or that family of magazines in the late 80s, early 90s, Matt Brock was like this grizzled veteran reporter who used to, you know, rave about Lou Thesz matches and Jack Briscoe and Eddie Graham and all these types. I'm sure that's right. And I believe Liz Hunter, I don't think she was a real person here either. So I could be wrong about this, but I'm sure this is right. And I was amused by these inside, it's like an inside joke. You know, we had these two reporters from PWI who were like reporters, who were names from decades ago. So I was amused by that.
My opinion, I think the AEW, they've got a really big uphill battle to climb tonight, because with NXT also, you know, I mean, AEW should take it as a compliment that WWE are trying to do Great American Bash and they're trying to throw all this stuff at it, you know, so they must be rattling them a little bit. But NXT are also going to be doing limited commercials, which obviously is going to help them, because then there's less chance to turn over to the other side and see what's going on.
Definitely.
But I think the thing about the AEW show is, if they pace it well, they could win it. And it's all going to be in the pacing of the show for them. So if I were them, I would be really sort of like going through the card with a fine tooth comb, thinking, are we building this and paying off at the times that we want it to? Because that's going to be the important thing, I think, to whether they win or lose tonight.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. Yeah, it's you're right. I mean, it's what's going on. It's like, it just shows that, it shows, I mean, it did seem for a while like NXT or WWE wasn't really that bothered about winning the Wednesday night weekly ratings war. but it seems like they've got renewed vigour about winning it again, doesn't it? It did seem for a while like they weren't really that bothered, and like they really are keen to win again now. And I imagine that number that they drew for the June 24th NXT is going to cause them to, you know, double their efforts to try and maintain this advantage.
Also interesting to note that Sasha and Bayley seem to have done better ratings and interest for NXT than Charlotte did in her whole run.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's got to be a blow to Charlotte. It's got to be a blow to the Charlotte Flair ego. But I mean, just underscores, Kenny, what we've been saying week after week. Sasha and Bayley, solid gold as an act. We've been putting them over. And no doubt, you know, us shoveling praise on these two has no doubt put them over and made them even bigger stars, Kenny. I think we deserve to take a bit of credit for their success.
Of course we do. Why, people should just listen to us. It's not that difficult. We know what we're talking about. I should mention very quickly, WWE have, there was kind of talk that there was going to be some sort of announcement or something going on yesterday regarding NXT UK. And what it was that they have decided to suspend Joe Coffey, and then they've also released referee Joel Allen, who also owns Suplex. The Joel Allen release comes off the back of a video that he was involved in with David Starr that you can find online if you want to check it out. If you watch it, it's pretty self-explanatory to see why. If you're in that video, you're probably, your days are numbered. But I mean, my question to you, so apparently the gist of, there was an internal conference call with the NXT UK talent yesterday. They were told that tapings are going to resume soon, so to kind of be ready for it. But there was also a kind of a sort of, they were told there's going to be a zero tolerance policy on any of the sort of stuff that's been going on or accusations that have been made. My question was going to be twofold. Number one, do you think that this, the speaking out movement, is going to affect how people view NXT UK? And also, you know, whether it's Joe Coffey or somebody else, can you come back if you are suspended? Can you come back from sort of accusations like this? I mean, is it something that's, is a rehabilitation period something that in this climate might work? Or is it a case of, you know, if you've got these accusations, it's probably just going to not work out that well for you upon your return?
Yeah, yeah, I agree. I mean, on the first question, I mean, I think this is going to affect NXT. I endorse the zero tolerance policy that WWE says it's going to implement. I'm sure I speak for you on that one, Kenny. I'm sure I speak for all the listeners as well. Absolutely, WWE needs to act on this. As I was saying last week, I mean, this is the talent needs to get together as well. The talent needs to let it be known to other talent that this type of behavior will not be tolerated, and that, you know, anyone behaving like this has no place in pro wrestling in the UK. You know, it's up to the talent as well, I think, to in many ways to kind of police themselves. I think that's very important. They have got to take responsibility here. They have got to set the stance, set the example here, that they are not going to do this. And if they find out that anyone in their circle is doing this, you know, they need to be, some people need to whistleblow. I mean, because this is really bad for the entire business. Wrestling people should not be behaving like this. If wrestlers know of someone who's behaving like this, that person should not be allowed in back into their circle. So that pretty much answers the second question. I think it's very difficult to come back from this. I mean, I guess it depends on the severity of what has happened. You know, it's fairly obvious that some of the people that we were talking about last week will never be allowed back into, or at least you would hope they're not going to be allowed back into a locker room anywhere. Given the, you know, seriousness of many of the things that came out of the last 2 weeks. But in, you know, in specific cases, you know, of the person who you just mentioned, who was suspended from NXT UK, I mean, it's difficult for me to really say whether or not there's a road back for him. I think it's going to be very difficult. I think it's going to be very, very difficult, because it's always going to be there at the back of your mind that this person did this thing.
There's a difficulty
or is at least alleged to have done this thing.
Yeah, the difficulty for me is I know Joe Coffey, so I was obviously very like shocked when I heard the news and saw the accusations and stuff. And I think that the issue is going to be is that, like, there's screenshots out there, there's all this stuff. And I think the issue is that he's not said anything publicly. And I think that not saying anything is, I mean, I don't know what you say. You know, I don't know what you say to I think there has to be a period of rehabilitation, as I said, if someone seems like that's what they want to do, or if indeed if they don't feel the if they feel the accusation is false, they need to take that to an authority. There's always different avenues it can go down.
Yeah,
I think that the problem is that for Joe Coffey, I think when he comes back, I think it's just going to be a very difficult thing. You know, because it can't go unmentioned. You know, we earlier today in the Facebook community, somebody had posted something where New Japan had a Ask Zack Sabre Jr. Anything thing. And every question was, why is he not spoken out about the Speaking Out movement? And so, you know, what we're seeing is silence is seen as a bad thing, whether you're someone who's accused or whether you're someone who's not even been accused. If you're someone who's involved in wrestling, you know, we're involved in British wrestling by default because we cover wrestling and we're in the UK. So we have to talk about it. And, you know, it's, they're uncomfortable conversations, but you kind of have to have them. So it's just a really, I think that NXT UK is going to, NXT UK suffered before from being, I think, the show that, like, if no matter what wrestling you consume, it's always going to be fairly low down in your list of priorities.
Yeah.
If you watch WWE stuff, excuse me, there's four or five other shows you're going to watch first. If you want to watch WWE and Impact and AEW, you're probably not going to get to NXT UK. So it's like there's so much wrestling out there that I just don't know when you get to it. And now adding this kind of stink onto it, it's going to be difficult. I can't imagine going to a UK takeover and having that atmosphere that used to be there, because it kind of feels like that's tarnished and I don't really know how to get it back.
I think, I mean, in time it will pass. I mean, obviously will, but I mean, the people who have been implicated in this, who allegations have been made about, these people need to be, they cannot really be a part of this anymore. How can they be? Because if they are there, it's the companies seem to be condoning this behavior, and it cannot do that. Absolutely cannot. And the other performers cannot condone it either, as I've stated. I mean, it's up to wrestling to, you know, to just flush this out and to just eradicate this from the business, this type of behavior. It should, you know, absolutely should not be occurring. So, you know, there's, you know, wrestling has in this position right now. The performers have brought this upon the business through their behavior or through their alleged behavior. And there's a period right now when pro wrestling needs to root out, you know, root and branch reform in a sense to eliminate this behavior and to try and rebuild its image. I mean, it can be done. I mean, obviously, we had the sex and steroid scandals in the WWF between 91 and 94. And it took a very long time for WWF to, you know, eliminate that stink, to use a word that, you know, to use that phrase. But it did do eventually. You know, NXT UK can do that as well. But it's up to that promotion and the talent and the staff and everyone involved, you know, to behave in a professional manner and to be worthy of the fans' support, Kenny. I think, in a nutshell, that's it, isn't it? They need to prove to the paying audience and to fans in general that they are worthy of the fans' trust, their emotional investment, and their financial support. So it's going to be a long road, but it's, you know, they're the only ones who can do it. So it's up to them, really, to make it happen.
Let's two last kind of short stories before we get into SmackDown. Pro Wrestling Sheet first reported it that Gallows and Anderson appear to be Impact bound. They appear to be going to Impact Wrestling. Will probably make their debut at Slammiversary. What do you think the prospects are for Gallows and Anderson at this point, heading into kind of the rest of 2020 beyond? Where do you see them fitting in Impact?
Well, I mean, they're going to do well there. I mean, let's face it, we'll talk about this in a moment. They obviously don't have a world champion as of you know, until Slammiversary, that's when the new champion's going to be crowned. Tessa Blanchard has been stripped of the belt. We'll come back to that in a moment. As far as Gallows and Anderson go, I believe that they can work for Impact and they can work for New Japan as well. I think that's going to be their primary destination once they can return and start to renew Japan again. So I think this is going to be more of a part-time gig for them. But I think, I mean, they'll be champs there. I think they'll do really well there. I think the company is creatively is very well set up. They'll slot right in. I think they'll do really well there. And I think they'll have a good time there as well. It'll be kind of a low pressure environment for them. I think they'll have a lot of freedom in what they say and what they do. And I think for them, it'll be like a holiday camp compared to working for WWE. because they'll just have so much latitude in what they can do, what they can bring to the table. Obviously, the veterans, the well-established, they're going to come in there with a lot of respect. You know, in a way, they haven't got that much to prove because they've been around long enough now. And they did do some good stuff in WWE. Obviously, it wasn't used to the best of their abilities. But I think they're going to slot right in. I think they'll do tremendous. They'll be huge assets to that company. Absolutely, they will.
Yeah.
And you know, once they can go back to, and it's like it's something for them to do until they can return to Japan. You know, it's probably be a decent payday for them, keeps them in ring shape, and they can just do that between New Japan tours.
Yeah, I think they're going to do well there. They're for all the reasons that you mentioned, and I think that what they're going to be trying to show now is that we're more than what we were allowed to do before. And I think that's a good thing. But as you mentioned, the big story coming out of Impact is that they have released Tessa Blanchard. They stripped her of the Impact World title, citing that she wasn't willing to do promos. And obviously she's not said anything, so we don't know her side of the story. There has been attitude issues in the past that have come out about her. So now it seems to be she's a free agent, and where's she going to go? There's interest in WWE. Obviously her dad is in AEW, Tully Blanchard. So what do you think Tessa Blanchard's prospects are right now? Should companies be going after her, and where do you think she might end up?
I don't know. I mean, you know, I'm ambivalent about this one, Kenny. This is, you know, two minds about this one. I mean, I'm a fan of hers as an in-ring performer. You know, I think she's a tremendous talent. I think she can do it all. She takes her business very seriously. But I mean, I think she's really let Impact and herself down here. I mean, you go back to January, you know, there's lots of bullying accusations were made about her in the run-up to a match with Sami Callihan at Hard to Kill for the Impact World title. Impact took a lot of static. I mean, you know, they took a lot of flack for even continuing to use her. Then they made a champion. They went through with it at Hard to Kill. Sami Callihan, to his credit, he put her over in a really tough match. He went out there and, you know, what a pro. I'm not saying that Tessa needs someone to make her look good in the ring, but Sami could not have done more to make her look like a star in that match.
He did a great job.
He really did a great job. It was a long match, really put her over, made it seem like she deserved that title. And it seemed like an emotional night for her as well, you know, to become the first woman to win a world title that men also vie for. So, I mean, it really felt like quite a big occasion. And then obviously after she won the belt, there was more allegations made about her. And she kind of denied them and said, you know, that she wanted to, you know, I think she sort of acknowledged that things had happened. But she was seemed determined to really try and, I don't know, like atone for what she'd done previously. I think to an extent she did. I can't exactly remember what she said. But I mean, to me, coming out of that, the impression I got from her was that she wanted to use this title reign as a force for good and to try and really set the example and really trying to prove to these people that had knocked her that she wasn't that person anymore. That was the impression I got. I'm sure it was the impression you got as well, Kenny. It was, wasn't it? She was saying,
yeah,
you know, I'm here, I'm the champion now, you know, I'm going to conduct myself like a champion.
Past blah, is blah, the blah, past.
Blah. past is the past. Absolutely. It was like, you know, I want to be, you know, somebody who's an example to others, and I'm determined to be somebody that other wrestlers can look up to, despite what has or hasn't happened in the past. So obviously, you know, lockdown occurred. She's living in Mexico at the moment, so she wasn't coming in to do the tapings. She had sent in, I think, a couple of videos. She'd done like either one or two interviews, but she hadn't been seen on TV for a while. And then suddenly last week, it was announced by Impact, a very short statement, that she'd been stripped to the belt. And then the word leaked out that she'd refused to send in videos, was reluctant to, you know, drop the belt to anyone in the company. And I just couldn't quite believe it, really, that, you know, Impact had really put its trust in her, stood by her in her hour of need, and she didn't reciprocate. So, I mean, I thought this was very poor indeed behavior on her part, if this is indeed true. But I mean, I can't believe that they would have stripped her of the title if she was willing to return. So there's got to be truth to this, in my opinion. You know, if I'm wrong, obviously I'll be the first to admit it. So now at Slammiversary, they've announced that it's going to be Eddie Edwards versus Trey versus Ace Austin versus a mystery opponent for the vacant Impact World title. I mean, they ran a tournament on TV for weeks to determine a new number one contender to Tessa's title. So they were setting everything up for her. You know, she wasn't there, but she was absolutely included in everything that was going forward. Ace Austin won that tournament. So, I mean, this was leading to an Ace Austin versus Tessa Blanchard match. Instead, that's not happening. She's been stripped of the belt, and it's now going to go to the winner of that four-way. But yeah, I mean, this whole thing was, you know, her title reign was supposed to rehabilitate her image, you know, with her peers, you know, with everyone in the business and with fans who I'm sure thought less of her when they read those allegations. And then she goes and does this. All I'll say, Kenny, is that any company that does business with her now has been warned.
Yeah, I mean, if you, the issue just now is that if you're AEW or WWE, like, you don't really want the other person to get her, because she could, if she's motivated. And again, I mean, you know, we're trying to have this idea that if there's two sides to this story, maybe there's stuff we don't know. But, yeah, you know, from based on what we do know, or Impact side of it, you know, what do? You kind of go, let them have her, they, you know, she can be their problem? Or do you kind of go, you know, if you're AEW, do you go, well, if we bring her in, her dad's here, Tully's here, we foster a pretty positive environment for people to be around, so maybe we can utilize her, you know, and not have the problems. Then she goes to WWE, they're not going to take a lot of that stuff that's been happening. So I don't know where she ends up. I mean, my gut says she ends up in WWE because I think they'll be less trepidatious about the attitude, but I think it could come back to bite them.
Yeah. I mean, I know there have been some problems in the Mae Young Classic tournament when she was in that, and they didn't like her attitude, and that was why they passed on her. But I mean, you're right. I mean, AEW does seem like a good fit for her, because she could, you know, the AEW women's division is like really weak, so she could go straight in there and probably become champ within 3 months. I mean, she's absolutely good enough for that. You know, as I say, her in-ring act, I mean, I think she's a tremendous in-ring performer. She takes herself, takes a in-ring performance and a promos very seriously. But I mean, I'm just stunned that she didn't go back to drop the title. And like, as if she wasn't insistent upon that. Because, I mean, to me, if I was her, she's still only, what, is she 24, 25? She's still only young, isn't she?
Yeah, I think she's 25.
25. So, I mean, she's theoretically got at least 5 good years left in her. And that's 5 big money years ahead of her. I would be saying to Impact, listen, I want to come back. I want to lose this title in the ring. I want to go out the right way. I want to stand there in the ring after I drop the belt and raise the hand of whomever's beaten me. And I want to go out the right way, especially after you put your trust in me back in January when, you know, all this information came out about me and made me champion. And you know, the first woman to hold a title that previously had been held by men. I think it really shows, you know, a lack of class on her part. You know, just you know, ingratitude, really, Kenny, that she hasn't gone back to do that. And also, by losing the belt in the ring, you send a stronger, clear message to AEW and WWE and whomever else out there that might want to hire her, that I will do business. I'm here to do business. You know, if you make me champ, I'll lose the belt when the time comes to whoever you choose. Because, I mean, that's the sort of attitude, that's the sort of person that AEW and WWE wants in their locker room, isn't it?
Yeah. It's difficult because I think if I was Tony Khan or Vince McMahon or Triple H or whoever, you know, the decision-making person, I would be, so you said earlier on, you're in two minds. I'm in two minds. Like, do you pass on her because of all the stuff that we've just mentioned, or do you take her because she is brilliant? You know, she's got a lot of upside. And I just don't know what, it's a massive gamble, I think. But I don't know, because I just looked at her, she's actually still 24. She turns 24. 25 later this month.
Okay.
But it's, you know, essentially 25. But, you know, AEW, it's like their women's division, they could use a Tessa Blanchard. Sure. You know, they really could. But yeah, it's difficult. But then I don't think that she, wherever she goes, whether it's AEW or WWE, I don't think she's going to be able to get away with anything. So I think if she does start anything, she'll be gone. And yeah. I hope that there's maybe more to the story that we don't know that maybe makes it a little bit easier to think of her, because like you say, Impact, for all the, you know, the knocks that you can give them, they really gave her everything that you could and gave her all the chances and stood behind her when all that stuff came out about her past and still put the belt on her. And it kind of feels like a slap in the face to, you know, if the whole thing is that she doesn't want to wrestle during COVID, that's fine, but she can cut promos for them.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there was many ways of handling this, you know, that were going to be to the benefit of Impact Wrestling, to the Impact Wrestling locker room, and to her image as well. I mean, she needs to make a statement. To me, she should have gone back and she should have lost that title in the ring to really whoever. I mean, I think it would have been Ace Austin. I mean, who is admittedly is not a big star, but I think he is a rising star and he's doing well. And I think she has wrestled him previously and he has beaten her previously. So maybe she didn't have any objection to losing to Ace. I'm not sure. It just all does seem very strange. This is going to be like a, you know, black cloud over her career that she could have really done without at this point, you know, in her life. And you say, yeah, she's 25 later this month, but she, you know, she has been around the business long enough now to really know how to behave. And obviously she was brought up in the business. So, I mean, she's kind of got no excuse really for not playing by the rules, you know, as the daughter of Tully and the stepdaughter of Magnum. Then, you know, she, as soon as she realized what wrestling was, and as soon as she expressed an interest in getting involved in the business, they would have been explained to her how it all works and how you have to conduct yourself. So she's got no excuse really, to me, for not being, you know, a paragon of virtue in the business. You know what I mean? She should be someone who's setting the example to others. You know, and if you're the top star, the world champion or whatever, that's what you're supposed to do. It's not just about going in the ring and having the best match. It's about conducting yourself as a champion backstage as well.
Well, we'll see where the story goes. I'm sure, you know, soon enough we'll know where she's heading, and hopefully she's able to get it. But yeah. Anyway, so let's finish up by talking about SmackDown. Obviously, as we say, because of COVID and all the stuff going on, there's, you know, they were shuffling, so they basically turned half of the show into a Taker tribute show. They showed the Boneyard match from WrestleMania. Did you get the sense from all the stuff they were doing on the show that Taker is done, or did you get the sense that they're kind of milking a bit of thank you, Taker, and they still intend to bring him back?
Well, it seemed from everything that was stated here that he's retired. The Boneyard match was the final match, and he is done. That is it. No more matches. Doesn't mean that there won't be any more matches, but that was the message that I felt they were conveying. And that all the talking heads who were commenting on Undertaker as a performer and his career and his status and his legacy and his legend, All of them were talking about him as the, in the past tense, weren't they, as a wrestler? That seemed pretty consistent throughout the show. So what do you think, Kenny?
Yeah, I mean, I think it seems like as of now that is the plan, but I think, you know, let's ask each other in 3 years and see if we believe it. I mean, you know, they made it a big deal. The start of the show, you had people, you know, had everybody out clapping for him and saying thank you, Taker. Later on, they had King Corbin sort of healing on him, and you know, at one point, Corbin said he wanted to leave Mark Calloway with one final thought: "You suck," which was quite funny, and that ended up paving the way for Jeff Hardy and Corbin as the main event. And Hardy beats Corbin, then Hardy basically does the Taker pose to the big screen, which has Undertaker on it. So, I mean, it did feel nice, even though they were scrambling to kind of get stuff. So, I did feel that it was a nice moment.
Yeah, I thought it was as well. I mean, yeah, we had the Hardy-Corbin match and Corbin's there running him down. And I thought he did a really good sort of mid-card heel promo trashing him. And then Jeff Hardy was out to defend the Undertaker's honour and then, of course, defeated him in the match. And afterwards, Corbin attacked Hardy and Big E smashed Corbin. And then Matt Riddle got in the ring and he nailed Corbin as well. And Riddle Corbin's going to be Corbin is going to be Riddle's first proper program, isn't it, on SmackDown?
Lucky Riddle.
Yes, which, you know, I think we did talk about a few weeks ago. It did seem like a good start for Riddle. It's a good starting point. I mean, I know he obviously defeated AJ Styles, but I mean,
you get the Rumble tie-in when Corbin eliminated him.
Yeah.
So, absolutely. You know, it makes sense.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, I forgot about that with Matt Riddle, you know, walking around and annoying people. And it just shows you, doesn't it, how quickly people can be forgiven, especially when they become essential and when they become important and useful. You know, all that, you know, bad stuff, well, we'll forget about that. That's in the past. So, I mean, yeah, Matt Riddle ended up nearly in Corbin as well. And then Hardy did the Undertaker pose, as you say, as a large photo appeared on the big screen. It did feel like a farewell, didn't it? But that doesn't mean anything. I mean, he could still wrestle again. I mean, I hope he doesn't. We've already covered this before. I hope that's it. I really genuinely want to believe that Mark Calloway was sincere when he was saying, "I'm through, I'm finished." It was the right way to bow out. I mean, I'm hoping that that does prove to be true, but we will see.
We will see. Well, I mean, the rest of the show, there wasn't really much to SmackDown. We saw Alexa Bliss, Nikki Cross, Lacey Evans, and Dana Brooke in a fatal four-way to see who faces Bayley at Extreme Rules. And Nikki Cross got the win. Sasha and Bayley were in commentary, which was fun. But the match was kind of okay. But, I mean, at least Dana Brooke didn't win. Thank fuck. Can you imagine those promos building that up? Oh. It would be a horror show at Extreme Rules.
Yeah, we haven't mentioned that, have we? Extreme Rules, the horror show. Well, yeah. You know, is this... I mean, you haven't mentioned, obviously, Braun Strowman came out and told a simply not believable tale about Bray Wyatt when they were in the swamp. And apparently a water moccasin snake bit Bray Wyatt on the cheek and bit him again. And Wyatt didn't bleed. He wasn't injured. You know, he started laughing. And at that point, Braun realized that Bray Wyatt was the devil incarnate. He was the devil, and that he was, you know, seduced by Bray Wyatt's supernatural powers. And Braun was saying that, you know, the thing that scares him the most about his time with Bray and the Wyatt family was that he enjoyed being that bad person. And he was saying that there's, you know, a little bit of that bad person is still there inside of him. And Braun was acting a bit, he was acting kind of sinister and menacing, wasn't he, Kenny?
He was playing up. I mean, the whole Wyatt Swamp fight that we're going to get at Extreme Rules, the horror show, like, I am here for it. I'm here for Hawaiian shirt Bray Wyatt, you know, telling him to run and all that kind of stuff. And it's an on-location thing. So the last time that Bray Wyatt was on location, we were very happy. So I'm hoping for a two for two here.
Yes, that's it. And, you know, as I mean, WWE has got some making up to do to us for the Velveteen Dream Adam Cole match at the last takeover, and then the that lunacy between the Street Profits and the Viking Raiders at Backlash. So they need to get they need to get back on track with this cinematic match concept, because they've kind of lost the way. But I do have faith, I do believe that this will be something to behold. So it's quite interesting the way that it was built by Braun on SmackDown. Bray Wyatt didn't appear, did he? We didn't hear from, it was just some laughter from him, wasn't there? That was piped in, but we didn't get a Bray Wyatt appearance on SmackDown.
No, he didn't. We just had Braun, which I thought was good. I mean, you don't want to overuse Bray, especially if you're using that old character, because the less you use him, the more intrigued you are to see how he is at Extreme Rules.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't be adverse to, like, maybe next week on SmackDown or this week on SmackDown, maybe they could visit Bray in the swamp, and we can just maybe get a little taster of what's to come from the swamp match at Extreme Rules. I'm on board for that. Maybe not, if not this week, certainly the following week. I think it would be nice to see Bray there, and maybe just a taster or something to whet our appetites for what we may get from the swamp match. So I think something like that would be quite interesting. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I think we definitely need to see Bray this Friday. We need to see him cutting a promo. I know some people are just like aghast at the whole horror show tagline. I think it's just a tagline to get people talking. I don't think it's really anything else. And you know, the swamp fight is probably going to be the most horror show esque type thing on the show. So it doesn't really bother me. And you know, the Braun stuff on SmackDown and the Taker stuff, at least that was on it, because otherwise the show was just a bit blah.
Yeah, it was. It was a bit of a nothing show, really. Just felt like filler and almost nothing exceptional. In fact, nothing. There was nothing really on there that you would describe as exceptional. It just kind of felt filler, phoned in, and kind of filler, really.
It's one of those episodes you literally could catch yourself up in about 10 minutes watching the clips on YouTube.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, it was like all this filler in between, you know, the tribute to The Undertaker. You know, that was the main thrust of the show. And the ratings for SmackDown did go up. So, I mean, there was interest in it. But I think this week, they obviously can't do a tribute to The Undertaker again. And we need a lot more original content. So, I think they need to up their game this Friday.
Well, listen, that's it for us here in the main podcast. We will be back on the Overrun covering Raw from Monday night, and issue 138 of PowerSlam magazine. We'll be covering that tomorrow over on Patreon at patreon.com/insidetheropes. Finn, have you any plugs for us?
Yeah, I ended up doing another written Q&A for Patreon. Yeah, that should be up there by now, Ken.
It is up there now. You can hear. It's actually a really interesting one. There's, you know, even a kind of jokey question, I think, which was probably from my expense, about should Savio Vega have won the 1995 King of the Ring. You managed to give it a serious and thought-provoking answer, Finn, which is why you're in the job that you're in.
This is why I'm here. No, it was. I actually thought it kind of was at your expense. Well, it actually would have really been at your expense if it concerned the In Your House event in February of 1998.
Oh, God, yeah.
But yeah, I thought that was a really interesting question, actually. And answered questions also on, you know, what would have happened if ECW had survived after January 2001. Answered a question on which was my favourite story to cover in PowerSlam. Answered a question on which younger members of the Raw roster have I been impressed by and can envision climbing the ladder in the near future. Another question on cinematic matches. Another question on which hold looked worse. John Cena's STFU, that's an old school description of it, STFU, or the Rock sharpshooter. So I managed to give an answer to that. So, and there's other questions as well. So that's up there now. I hope you, that's something that I'm sure people will enjoy reading. Or at least I hope they will.
Let's not give a spoiler on what move Finn thinks is worse. Cena's STFU and Rock Sharpshooter. Two awful moves. Anyway, well, listen, go check that out over on Patreon, patreon.com/InsideTheRopes, because the thing is, that's how we are keeping going right now during all the you know, no events. So we really do appreciate you guys taking the time to support us.
Yes, we do. Absolutely, we do.
But yeah, Finn, I hope you enjoy the rest of your week, whatever you are getting up to. DIY, I'm sure, at some point.
Something like that, Kenny. Something like that. Something, yes. Yes, I have those sort of things to do this week. And other things as well, actually. So I've got quite a lot coming up in the next few days. And yourself, hope you managed to get unpacked and get back to normal. Yep. I imagine there's still quite a lot to do following the move.
Yeah, lots of unpacking to do. So that's going to be taking up most of my week. But, you know, it's all good. We are in very fortunate positions compared to what some other people are probably going through at this time. So, thank you very much for listening, everybody, and we'll talk to you soon. If I be tonight, if I'm sad tonight.